It has been said that the Baphomet was regarded as a god by various groups and organizations such as the Knights Templar. It is most famously portrayed as a goat-headed deity with a human body, harboring both male and female attributes, an androgen representing perfect balance, a union of opposites, and illustrates the old cryptic saying, as above, so below. The word hermaphrodite, incidentally, comes from combining the words Hermes and Aphrodite. This symbolism is further expressed in the 16th letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the Ayin, meaning I. It's also the 16th letter of the Phoenician alphabet, which gave us the origin of the Greek and Latin letter O. The perfect circle, it is also symbolic of balance, as well as an ancient and universal symbol of unity, wholeness, infinity, and the goddess energy. It represents the female spirit or divine force. The dot in the center of the circle, in some esoteric occult interpretations going back for many millennia, represents the male force. So combined, the circle and the dot symbolize the spiritual merging of male and female polarities. Ayin is for eye, and indeed its ancient pictograph symbol is that of an eye, which can still be broadly seen on what is popularly known as the Hamza and other places. The word pyramid comes from pyro, meaning fire, and mid, meaning middle. To secret societies and ancient mystery schools, the Ayin represents light. Whose attribute is liberty, is also regarded as the goat of Mendes. The last Sabbath of the Roman month of December falls on the Germanic pagan festival of Yule, which the Roman Catholic Church transformed into Christmas. It may surprise some Americans to learn that the goat figures prominently in Scandinavian Christmas, still called by its original pagan name of Yule. The origin of the Yule goat goes as far back to pre-Christian days, where goats were linked to the pagan Norse god Thor, who rode the sky in a chariot drawn by two goats. According to Norse legend, when Thor killed and cooked the two goats, their flesh provided sustenance for the deity and his guests, following which Thor resurrects them with his hammer the following day. There are many variations on the common theme. In Finland, the Yule goat was an ugly creature that frightened children and demanded gifts at Christmas to be placated. During the 19th century, its role shifted towards becoming the giver of Christmas gifts. In Finland, as well as the rest of Scandinavia, with one of the men in the family dressing up as the Yule goat. The goat was replaced by Father Christmas, or Santa Claus, at the end of the 19th century. Christmas wasn't even celebrated in the US until the mid-1800s, because it was considered a pagan drinking holiday of revelry and, in some cases, orgy.
Christmas trees, candy canes, even Santa Claus seem like they've been around forever. But many of these Christmas traditions are surprisingly recent.
Centuries before Jesus walked the earth, early Europeans were celebrating light and birth in the darkest days of winter. In the Norse country, this winter celebration was known as Yule. Around December 21st, the winter solstice, fathers and sons would drag home the biggest log they could find and set it on fire. Also dragged inside were evergreens, the one plant that could make it through a Norse winter. Evergreens proved that life persisted in this dark time.
There's a natural attraction to that which lives through the winter when one is struggling to survive through the winter.
For as long as the Yule log burned, about 12 days, feasting and revelry reigned supreme.
Time to party.
The party raged inside in defiance of winter's deadly howl. In Germany, the pagan god Odin lent his name to this midwinter holiday. Later, we'd see another Christmas sky rider, Santa Claus. 1,000 miles away in Rome, winter was less harrowing, but the December festivals were just as elaborate. 1 week before the winter solstice, Romans began celebrating Saturnalia, a month-long orgy of food and drink. Named for the god Saturn, which meant plenty, Rome's established order was turned on its head during this wild, delirious time.
The Saturnalia celebrations were certainly times of revelry, of turning the social order upside down, of having the master pretend to be the slave and the slave pretend to be the master, sort of a time out of time.
One of the holiday's important feasts was Juvenalia, which celebrated the children of Rome.
Although these early festivals are not necessarily about children particularly, though they are about fertility, children did have their particular place. The indulgence of children, of course, is very much a part of our modern Christmas, but it did have its place even in these ribald, drunken festivals that the Romans had.
Many influential Romans worshipped Mithra, the god of the unconquerable sun. To this small but powerful sect, the birthday of Mithra was the holiest day of the year.
December 25th was the winter solstice in that part of the world, and it was also understood to be the birthday of the sun god, Mithra. And many of those stories, of course, have come into Christian tradition.
While Romans were worshiping the sun god, a new religion was taking hold throughout the empire. At first, Christians didn't celebrate the birth of Christ. His resurrection was the essential fact of the new religion. By the 4th century, however, the question of the holy birth became impossible to ignore. For Christians, the fact of his birth was settled, but the date remained a mystery. The Bible doesn't mention exactly when Christ was born, but certain facts suggest it probably was not in December. If pagan Rome was already celebrating the birth of Mithra on December 25th, it seemed natural to honor the birth of the Christ child at the same time. By the 4th century, the church made it official. December 25th was declared the feast day of the Nativity. The church knew it could not outlaw the pagan traditions of Christmas, so it set out to adopt them. The evergreens traditionally brought inside were soon decorated with apples, symbolizing the Garden of Eden. These apples would eventually become Christmas ornaments. And holly, a traditional midwinter decoration, was recast to represent Christ's crown of thorns.
People already had their own agenda for this season, and that agenda was not one that was really radically changed when the names got changed from non-Christian to Christian names.
The tension between piety and revelry at Christmas would reach its logical and extreme conclusion in Puritan England, when the holiday would be considered so unchristian it was done away with altogether.
There are several theories as to the origin or etymology of the word Baphomet. One of them argues that a substitution cipher was used in the creation of the word, which substitutes the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet for the last, the second for the second last, and so on. Therefore, Baphomet, rendered in Hebrew with such a cipher, can be interpreted as the Greek word sophia, meaning wisdom. In this context, the Baphomet carries the same occult meaning as the owl. Let us see what Freemason Aleister Crowley has to say about this, since he was known to sign his name as Baphomet. In his book Magic, Book 4, Crowley asserted that, and I quote, "The devil is, historically, the god of any people that one personally dislikes. This serpent, Satan, is not the enemy of man, but he who made gods of our race, knowing good and evil. He bade know thyself and taught initiation. He is the devil of the Book of Thoth, and his emblem is Baphomet, the androgen, who is the hieroglyph of arcane perfection. He is therefore life and love. But moreover, his letter is Ion, the I, so that he is light, and his zodiacal image is Capricornus, that leaping goat whose attribute is liberty." We established earlier that the Ion is the 16th letter of the Old Hebrew and Phoenician alphabets, but in the occult and alternative sciences, there is no such thing as any number past 9. So a 16 is actually 1 plus 6, giving the Ion the numeric or Kabbalistic value of 7, which incidentally is the true meaning of the G in Freemasonry, as it is the 7th letter of the English alphabet. The motto of the Pythagorean mystery school is "All is number," and the number 7 alludes to the heavily guarded secrets of sacred internal alchemy, which will be another video. My name is Robert Sepper. Thank you for supporting Atlantean Gardens and for sharing these videos. Please subscribe, and I will see you next time.